Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to your favorite podcast. This is realestateinvestormba.com. We created Real Estate Investor MBA to leverage the knowledge of giants through synthesizing and providing much needed information to all investors, from the veteran investor to the new and aspiring investor. At Real Estate Investor MBA, we plan to cover pertinent information head on with our expert guests, who we will interview on what they are doing and preparing for in the days and years ahead. We aim to create MBA quality curriculum topics and themes from the information garnered among our interviewed guests in order to bring world-class value to our fellow community of listeners. We truly believe that rising water raises all ships. And by sharing this leveraged knowledge, we can create a stronger online community, which translates to stronger local, regional, and national communities. Your hosts are Jeremy Moyer, who is a veteran real estate investor and author of a new book called Are You Playing the Real Estate Game Blind? As well as Tejas Gosai, the owner of eXp Realty, the Tejas Gosai team, and also co-manager in a newly formed Regulation D private equity fund called the Lehigh Valley Private Equity Fund. Now let's get to the show. All right, guys. So I've been waiting for this podcast forever. My friends, family, and all of us have spent years on this private equity fund to bring it to life. So Jeremy, what is the title again?
It's Behind the Curtain of a Private Equity Fund. I know I've been bugging you a little while to do one of these because I think there's so much content out there on syndications, right, with any asset class that you see. And, you know, if people talk about starting a fund because you're like, oh, it'd be so cool to have all this money available when I find an asset, you know, and not having to find the money. But I don't think I've heard any conversation or anybody speak about actually what happens behind the scenes at a private equity fund. You know, once you have the money, how do you make these decisions? And even after you buy something, then sell it, and then what are you looking for next? I think, and that's really why I wanted to do this with you guys, just to kind of get the thought processes around what goes on. I think it's great content.
Yeah, thank you. And I don't like to brag too much, but what we've created, that it's like my blood, literal blood, sweat, and tears. And it's actually cool to be able to share it because, you know, this is high level stuff, but it's very easy to understand. And then it's easy to employ. Like, I had to get over a lot of my fears in raising money at a young age. And I think everyone is capable of doing whatever they want to do. There's so many people that are like, oh, hey, how'd you start that fund? I'm like, well, let me tell you, you can do it too. Absolutely. But, thanks for the suggestion, Jeremy. I hope you guys enjoy.
Yep. Cheers.
Cheers. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to your favorite real estate podcast. This is Real Estate Investor MBA. My name is Tejas Gosai. I'm joined by my partner, Jeremy Moyer.
Hello, how you doing?
And we always start with a thank you. Thank you to everybody who has made this show possible. It's been super fun. We're pretty close to 50 episodes now, right?
We're getting near there, yep.
Yeah. And we're all over the internet, LinkedIn, Facebook, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, iTunes, iHeartRadio, and we love you all. So we've been getting some good responses. People have actually requested a couple different subjects, which is really wonderful. We thank you for that. And Jeremy, quick little piece on what we just released. The last podcast got a big hit on Facebook.
Huge hit, yep.
Yeah, what was the subject? What was the name of it?
The name of the podcast?
Yeah.
It was How to Underrate Self-Storage Assets.
Yeah, I forgot the name of the...
Oh, Bruce Stankavage.
Yeah, he was awesome. And everyone has been waiting for something on this subject. So somebody suggested it. Jeremy always finds the best guests. And so today's podcast is a little different. I get to be a guest, and we're going to show everybody the behind the scenes, or a look behind the curtain of a private equity fund. So from start to finish, we'll have some fun. Jeremy, always thanks for doing everything.
Absolutely. So today we're going to announce all the guests that we have. As Tejas mentioned, he's a guest himself. And we also have John Levine and Jeff Sella with us. Both John and Jeff our repeat guest. So John was on episode number 14, and Jeff was on episode number 22. So you definitely got to check those out. Tons of great information. So just to give some context and some backgrounds on our guests. So Jeff Sella has over 25 years of commercial lending experience working in the Lehigh Valley. This is Pennsylvania, for various regional and national banking institutions. Jeff started his first private equity fund in 2011 under Regulation D. That was called the Conquest Fund. And the Conquest Fund targeted residential real estate investors looking for purchasing rehab loans. He started a second lending fund, CF Fund Number 2, in 2018 when the offering received qualification under the SEC pursuant to Regulation A. So Conquest Funding and CF Fund 2 had generated over $47 million in loans, financing over 410 projects, and as of the date of this memorandum, have never missed an interest payment to any investor. Jeff's responsible for all the areas of management and operations of the funds. Jeff personally reviews each loan application with his lending team before committing to making a loan because he values quality over quantity when making loans. And John Levine, to introduce John, has spent over 25 years in the real estate sector, having started at the director of taxation for one of the largest strip center developers in the country at the time. John's consultant for, at the time, a small New York City-based shopping center owner that was ramping up its organization, embarking on an acquisition spree that created a company that went from $30 million worth of assets to well over $500 million in a period of just 3 years. John's currently the chief investment officer of the Lehigh Valley Private Equity Fund. And as you all know, my partner and co-host with the show is Tejas Kasai. So Tejas has over 20 years of real estate experience, including real estate development, property management, and commercial finance. With a focus on creating generational wealth for his investors, Tejas constructed, opened, and operated over a dozen major hotel, gas stations, multifamily assets, and developed retail and strip malls totaling over $75 million in real estate holdings. Combining his experiences, Tejas created one of the fastest growing commercial real estate firms specifically focused on the Allentown, Bethlehem, and Easton markets in Pennsylvania. He and his firm ranked in the top 100 teams in America, closing over $100 million in volume with an average of 26 and a half listing days on market. He's created a proprietary media-based interface and technology that unlocks Lehigh and Northampton County property owners throughout various commercial and residential asset classes. This technology is used to deliver unfettered access to off-market inventory exclusively for the Lehigh Valley Private Equity Fund. Wow, guys, that's a tremendous intro. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. We're excited to talk about this. You know, we weren't planning on doing this. This is more of a, you know, people were asking about private equity funds, and we've had folks that have been on. You know, we talk a lot about syndication, and you know, it all revolves around the same principles. But we've had some folks that have put together $500 million deals, and you know, just tremendous real estate investors like Borco. You know, he—I don't even know—he's up to like a billion in
ton of asset under assets under management. Yep.
Yeah, we had Jennifer DeJesus as well, who is a realtor that has a private equity fund, a large team, title company. So, you know, I also just really wanted to share this and kind of our or my evolution as somebody who has invested in real estate for many years and the son of a physician who helped me learn how to build generational wealth and have a high level of trust and integrity in running a business. I went to law school. I run my real estate team like a law firm. You know, we take everything incredibly seriously, confidential, and we aggressively negotiate. So it's been an awesome journey. And so Jeff and John have started with me on the journey to build this private equity fund. This started almost 3 years ago now. And we went through one of the worst periods ever in the history of time. And it's funny, but not funny. We actually got off the ground in March of 2020. And we raced to get off the ground then to have to take a year-long break. And put what we have together. So rather than me talking, Jeremy, let me hand it over to you.
Perfect. Well, so Jeff, can you just tell us a little about your history? In your bio, we went over the regulation D fund, regulation A fund. Can you just kind of give us the history of what it took to get those started? And really, what's the difference between regulation A and D?
Yeah, so the big difference between the two funds is regulation D is accredited investors only. Regulation A allows for non-accredited investors into the fund. But there are some limitations to regulation A. It only has a three-year capital raising window. And there's a lot of restrictions on the advertising. So it's a very different type of vehicle. It's really designed for more individual projects, more so than a lending fund. In fact, when we went to the SEC with it, they weren't sure we could even do it. They said, submit it and we'll see what happens. So we submitted it. And after about 33 months, we got it approved by the state of Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and also the SEC.
Jeff, can you comment on the fact that you helped write the legislation almost?
Well, I don't want to say I helped write their legislation. I think we influenced it in the state of Pennsylvania because they were making changes to the legislation as they were reviewing our fund. And some of those changes were reflected by some of the things we had in our fund. So I'd say on a local basis with the state of Pennsylvania, that's probably the case.
And that was not too long ago.
That was in 2018, January 2018.
Yeah.
We were approved in March of 2018.
So Tejas, can you summarize just in a few sentences for our listeners the fund that you guys started, the Lehigh Valley Private Equity Fund?
Yeah, definitely. And I'm going to read this. So just give me a moment. So our fund, Lehigh Valley Private Equity Fund, is a Regulation D evergreen private equity fund designed to provide an 8% annual preferred return and an overall annualized target return of 12 to 18% through diversification in lending, which is Jeff's world, and acquisitions in the real estate industry. Lehigh Valley Private Equity Fund, we use three methods to create returns for our investors, so qualified lending, real estate redevelopment, construction projects, and long-term acquisition. And one neat thing, this little pause that we took in the past year helped us rewrite our PPM in a couple different changes. One of them is because a lot of our investors are senior in age and they want a consistent income. So we have a monthly preferred return payment and then a quarterly payment of the excess distributable cash. So that's the long and short of it. I'll stop again.
And then when you guys were, I guess this is kind of behind the curtain type thing, like when you guys were talking and meeting early on, why did you choose the form it under Regulation D versus, you know, any of the other various regulations that you could have formed the fund under?
Yeah, so we chose Regulation D for the really the advertising benefits of it. Mm-hmm. You know, if you go back to 2011 when we started our first fund, you were not allowed to advertise these things. You had to have a pre-existing business relationship with anybody you brought into the fund. So talk about hard to raise capital in 2011 when we started out. It was really restricted. It was like a club. You know, somebody knew somebody who knew somebody. That was the only way you'd get in, exposed to these kinds of things. So, you know, in 2013, the Jobs Act was passed, and that changed all the regulations and allowed advertising. So Regulation D allows us to advertise this fund to accredited investors across the country. And that's really the challenge of getting the story out and getting people to look at what we're doing in terms of the returns we're offering, the security we're offering, the payments that we're offering, and the kinds of things that really matter to investors.
Hey, Jeff, real quick. So we can advertise anywhere, but we can only accept accredited investors.
That is correct. They have to meet the standard of accredited investor.
Which is the hurdle in having this type of fund. So yes. there is always a hurdle. Do you want to just explain to the listeners what that is to be an accredited investor?
Yeah. So to qualify as an accredited investor, we have to be able to verify you that you have a net worth of in excess of $1 million, not counting your primary residence, or that you have annual income of at least $200,000 individually or $300,000 jointly for 2 years, and then expect to have that going forward. And we have a couple different ways to qualify people.
So I have a question on my mind. The term syndication is incredibly popular today, I would say. You know, I hear it all the time. We talk about it quite often on the show. A lot of the guests are syndicators as well. Well, they'll raise money specifically for one deal. Can you guys, maybe John, this may be a good answer, question for you. Could you give me like the thought behind why you wanted to start like an evergreen fund, pooling multiple assets into a fund versus, you know, syndicating one asset at a time, just the thought process behind that and the benefits of that?
Sure. I think, flexibility, on lending side, as well as the acquisition side, syndications for an office building, one asset might raise 20, 50, 100 million dollars, more, whatever, would have been affected dramatically during the pandemic. Where tenants were moving out, didn't pay. One asset syndications are great, but they have that risk factor. And so I spend all my time with risk, whether it's what assets we're looking to invest in and how much. So the fund was designed to give us flexibility, which therefore gives the investors benefit of the fact that we could move money around to various assets at various times to hopefully mitigate the risk of something that would have happened to single asset syndications.
Okay, that makes sense. The diversification factor, it sounds like it would be a big plus in market timing or anything that's happening, right?
Right. Well, we're called the Lehigh Valley Private Equity Fund for a reason. So geographically, we're not diversified. Asset type, we can invest in all kinds of real estate assets. Mm-hmm. There are numerous opportunities here in the Lehigh Valley. There's a big industrial asset class here with warehouses. There's 11 universities. So you've got student housing. You've got a large medical component that makes up a large amount of the community. You have Fortune 500 companies that have office and data complexes. So on and on and on. So that flexibility mixed with, we can look at an asset and say, do we want to buy it? Do we want to participate in it? Do we want to lend to it? At each level that we're able to do that, as buying it wholly, buying it with somebody else, lending it to it wholly, lending with someone else. So if you take all the rubrics of the combinations of being able to do that, that kind of mix is what really gives us the flexibility and to be able to really meet the goals set out in the private placement memorandum.
Okay.
No, yeah, I'd like to add, Tim, sorry, Jeremy. What we've created here is really somewhat unusual. If you go out into the market of private equity and syndications, you're not going to find very many funds that offer the lending component that we have. And we've got over 10 years of lending in this fix and flip type space, as well as my 30 years in banking and lending, as well as people on our staff here that have 30 plus years. So you're just not going to find that combination available, plus the ability for the fund to acquire real estate assets and investor equity in real estate. And those two together provide, I think, such a great diversification base in this industry. It's like something that I haven't seen anywhere else. I haven't seen anybody else do what we're doing in one fund.
Let me just jump in, for a second. And, we make decisions with regard to asset mix, risk mix, and also liquidity mix. So those two things play a role in what we're investing in. And as Jeff mentioned, and as Tejas loves to say, we can put money that has been entrusted to us to work fairly quickly to be able to start to generate returns for our investors. So a lot of these funds, you kind of aggregate all this money and it sits there for a long period of time. Once you get $100 million, then you can buy the building and do the deal. You know, we can get literally money in tomorrow and probably put it to work within a couple of days. And that starts generating returns for our investors immediately.
And let me clarify something. So I think, and Jeremy, we've had a lot of people that are like, you know, $50 million, 200 units, 700 units, you know, $500,000. Now that I am in the private equity fund industry and this space and what I've learned and what, you know, these gentlemen have patiently taught me, it's not about raising like millions of dollars. It's not about, you know, getting 20, 50 million, $100 million. I, you know, quickly, you know, we all assimilated on, we want to put the money to work for the investors that we have. We're creating a club. It's fun to do that and to do it honorably. And so, you know, all syndicators do that in some way, shape, or form. And I think the concept of like, you know, you got to do big real estate and hundreds of millions of dollars and, you know, private equity fund and all of that gets misconstrued. We have a very smart and calculated plan that we've been putting together that we put in motion a couple years ago that's finally now taking place. So, you know, we're not, I just think, you know, as a comment, people automatically think you're trying to do so many big and crazy things. We're really just trying to get to August 15th to return our first preferred return payment. And, you know, we're a new fund, which is kind of the crazy part of it. So I guess we can go into that in a minute, but just wanted to kind of comment.
I like what you just said. You know, it's not going after a home run after a home run after a home run, these big deals after big deals, right? It's you got to add these, let me just use the baseball terminology. We got the singles in there, you got to add these doubles in there. It's like loans, property. The loans give you a lot of liquidity because, right, they're short-term loans, shorter term than holding real estate assets. So it's that nice diversification of asset mix that provides that, I guess, the risk mitigation. What you were talking about, John, you look at risk every day across multiple asset classes. I guess when, and you, John, you even touched base upon this, you can put money to work quickly. Tejas, you and I were talking about this the other day, you know, money coming into a fund. I think we talk to a lot of investors that talk about the ABCs of raising money and, you know, securities attorneys. And we've had Gene Trowbridge on a couple times going over, you know, the ABCs of that. And you need a private placement memorandum. This is how you talk to the investor. That's great. You get this started. You raise the money. But then the money could be sitting there for a while. And there's just that drag on cash, right? What's the game plan? What's the goal? What was the thought process? I think I really want to get into. We titled this Behind the Curtain. So, like, what was the thought process? What was the conversations amongst the three of you game planning on how to deploy cash quickly in the right assets, of course, but how to deploy cash quickly to generate those returns? And then once those returns come in, how to continue rolling that into more assets to continue providing returns to investors. I think the conversation on that thought process, I don't think I've ever heard it from fund managers before, to be honest with you. I think a lot of listeners would be very curious about that as well. So I know that was very long-winded, but any of you can answer that.
Yeah, let me kick this off because Tejas and I sat down and I kind of had my own selfish interests at heart here, and that is that I'm not great at fundraising. So I've had my own funds. I've had two of them, and I'm a lender more so than a fundraiser. And so when I saw what Tejas could do on the marketing side and we could bring in money together, I wanted to be able to fuel the loan growth that we're having. We've always had more loans than we have funds to lend out, which sounds crazy, but literally we always have too many loans and never enough money. And so my interest was to create a fund that would continue to supply that money for forever. You know, as long as I wanted to be in the lending business, we would have that capital. And I
Tejas's side was on the real estate side. He saw so many great opportunities, and that's what his primary focus was, you know, picking up those opportunities instead of selling those properties to investors. But that's kind of the conversation, and John Tejas can jump in as well. But to me, it was I saw that kind of stream of cash that we could create, and that we could return easily 8, 9, 10, 11% to the investors just on the lending side alone. And I knew there was a lot more to be made on the property acquisition side.
Yeah, and just to kind of jump in here, when people invest with the fund, it doesn't become, let's say, the word activated until it enters the operating account. And it doesn't enter the operating account until we have some place to put it. So our goal was, how can we design a fund, and it's in the PPM, and Jeff has been in the lending business for a long time, generating 12, 13% returns on loans. And so to the extent that we can start, and this is what was envisioned with existing loans, and take a participation interest in those loans, limit the risk to the fund, but share in the wealth of experienced borrowers with track records. It's not like we're going to raise $100 million and go look for something to buy. This is, we're going to raise money, and we have a place that we're going to put it immediately. And that's powerful. And it's rinse and repeat, as Tejas likes to say, over and over again. We've made some loans without putting it out there. We're about to make some more and put investors' money to work. And start generating returns. So as Tejas said, every month we pay a dividend. The investors will get a dividend payment for the month of July, for money that they put in. So powerful, well thought out, and being executed.
I got to jump in on this too, because I am a true core real estate guy, right? For 20 years, this is like what I've done since I became an adult. So for me, I have so many investors that I've made rich. I can say that wholeheartedly. And, syndicating hotel deals, and, when I was building gas stations, and it was really, I had a great run in my 20s. So now in my second life, where I moved to a new market 6 years ago, I got my real estate license, and I started pounding the pavement. There were so many people that kept coming to me that kept saying, I want to buy a property. I have $50,000, or I want to own, something. I have $100,000. And the conversation was always, don't like put your money in something else. You don't want to go buy a 4-unit, extend yourself. You just want to own real estate. There's a lot of people that kind of just want to own real estate that they don't understand the fundamentals or the annoyance or the phone calls and things like that. So with this fund, my goal was, how do I take care of my law school friends and my doctors? I'm of Indian descent, so I have so many doctors that are working their tails off so that they can get up to 40, 50 units and then not do their job. That's like a consistent thing in, my life. So, just getting that out there, this was a natural progression of pounding the pavement for years and then begging Jeff, who I call the godfather of private equity funds, to agree to, look at my business plan for this concept and add his material. We took a long time to kind of get it cooking. And then it was off to the races with attorneys. And then we were writing a PPM, and that was years ago now. And it's a, 200 and something page document. That's our Bible. So, the business plan has been here in place. And so it's meant to kind of capture those folks that I've been working with for many years that don't want to own a 4-unit or an 8-unit or a 10-unit and need passive income. And they trust somebody to do it. So
I had a question that just came up in my mind. When we talk about, when you hear, at least what I hear on podcasts and people talk about funds, it's positive this, positive that, it's all about, that's kind of like what everybody wants to get to, right? just have, you know, at least in their mind, there's money there that I can use to go buy stuff without having to raise money for each deal. Is there downfalls, I guess, to starting a private equity fund with, I don't know, maybe with all the compliance work or the legal work up front, the ongoing compliance? Is there any downfalls to it? And if so, can you guys speak to that?
I'll go first because I know you guys will have more more to add to this real quick. So when I, you know, for the past many years now working for investors, private investors, and being able to move quickly and have speed and, you know, buying a 4-unit with somebody from New York City that's okay with like a 7% cap rate, it's like an in and out deal. And deals are easy to find. From my perspective, I can say this, I'll be open. I didn't know how difficult or how slow moving the process had to be to make sure everything was perfect. So it was a lot of education for me on, you know, you really have to look at a lot more deals. You really have to talk to John and look at this matrix and, you know, have a very serious discussion. And then you have to have Jeff's third-party appraisers and, you know, inspectors and audit, you know, it's so much. So for me, just that difficulty that, you know, I think other people may have known that this was coming. I didn't expect it to be this difficult. Also COVID a little bit, you know, it was a whole year, but that's my comment. Go ahead, guys.
Yeah, so, you know, one of the things that you realize quickly when you have a private equity fund is that you are now working for the investors. You know, when it's your own money, you're working for yourself and you're investing that money any way you want, sometimes without much due diligence. But as soon as you have a fund and you have investors, everything you do, you have to think in terms of how is this going to impact the investors? Is this good for the investors? Are we thinking about how this is going to work out in their favor? Right, because and we don't make a ton of money in the early years of private equity. In fact, we spend a ton of money and spend a ton of time. We take a huge amount of risk to get this started. We create this legal document that we have to know inside and out. It becomes our Bible and our playbook and everything. And every time we want to make a decision, we've got to refer to it and make sure that we're in compliance with the document. So it's a tremendous amount of work for us to get this up and running. And that's probably the drawback. Obviously, over time, it builds and builds and builds, and it's very satisfying to hear the stories about what the investors have done with the money and how it's impacted their lives for the better and all the opportunities that we get to acquire real estate and invest in real estate in various ways. But it is a big, big challenge to start it up successfully and get it off on the right foot.
And I'll just add on the operational side, you know, we intend to hit our returns. They're not guaranteed. Previous success is not guaranteed in the future. But what I've always looked to in reading hundreds of private placement memorandums, offering memorandums, S-1s, is does it make sense and have they considered all the options when making the investment? So, you know, to give you an example, if you buy a property, have you considered that taxes might go up? And is that in your projections? I mean, this is what you're hiring. You're basically hiring us to be able to make solid investments. Not all of them might pan out for various reasons, but at least you know that we've considered, you know, the options. And we do this day in and day out. And so, you know, from a scenario where you're investing in something that has risk, are we good at managing risk? Have we considered risks? And that's all the way from the actual asset we're investing in to taking into account macroeconomics. Are interest rates going to go up, and how do they affect what we've invested in? Local employment. And we try to look at all that information and read all that information and say, this is an area that we want to invest in. And luckily, in the Lehigh Valley, we have a lot of opportunity to do that.
All right, let's wrap this up. I got a couple little things, though, if you don't mind if I outro this. That's right. John, he just said, and I didn't know that, but he's, you know, hundreds of PPMs. I assumed something like that. But, you know, a lot of stuff that we've talked about today is pretty complex. We're trying to break it down. A lot of the previous podcasts, you know, we're explaining cost segregation and 1031 exchange and how to, you know, divert capital gains and all that stuff. For the people who are just starting out or, you know, have already done a couple things in real estate or gotten a few units, I think it's really important to know that everything is available for you to read and check out. Like, we'll get you our PPM. It's beautiful. Besides that, you can look at other people's private equity fund information. All of the investment strategies out there are all over the internet. You know, we just had a couple people on that were from London, and or was it London? Yeah. Yep. And they own how many units?
I think they're from Cambridge, but they're from the UK. And then, what, 188 in less than a year?
Yeah, it was a COVID project for them. Yeah, yes. And it took them better part of a year from last year to now to close on 88 unit. That was their first deal in February. And then their second deal was a 100-unit deal just like a month ago. Yep. And these guys started from scratch listening to podcasts just like we do. And that's one of the reasons that we do this. So thank you guys for listening. You know, we'll go back to highlighting other guests. And, you know, we love you guys. So thanks for letting me have my partners on. Jeremy, as always, you pick the best guests. And it's Real Estate Investor MBA. Check us out on the internet everywhere. We appreciate you and your time. Cheers.
Thanks much.